Wednesday, July 23rd, 2025. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the YIC here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope you had a good weekend. Now, but you are halfway to another weekend. I hope your week is going well. I hope you, your family, your friends, everyone in your world is staying strong and healthy right now. And you know, I did something this past weekend that I do not normally do. No, I didn't watch baseball. I did, however, go see a movie in the theater, and I saw a sports movie at that. You know that I am usually very opposed to Hollywood touching the world of sports, because Hollywood just doesn't understand sports. They never have, and I don't think they ever will. I mean, think about it. Hollywood tried to tell us that 5 foot, I don't know, eight, Sylvester Stallone was a heavyweight boxer. He couldn't be a middleweight champion. They had to make him a heavyweight. Hollywood tries to tell us that players have like full conversations with each other in the middle of like the biggest championship game ever. Yeah, that doesn't happen. Hollywood tells us that if a kid doesn't sign with the massive hometown Division I blue blood college program, then I guess no other schools would ever dream of signing them in the whole country. And never, ever forget that Hollywood told us that a dog, like a golden retriever named Bud, earned a starting job on a high school basketball team, and not one parent complained that a dog was taking their son's minutes. Yeah, so I don't really trust Hollywood. However, Mrs. Dose and the Dose children wanted to go see the new Brad Pitt racing movie F1. So I went along, and I'll be honest, I kind of liked it. I was entertained. No, I didn't try to analyze it too much. I tried not to overthink the physics of the race cars doing certain things, but I enjoyed the movie. For starters, I'll say this, that movie is beautiful to watch. It is beautifully shot, and I like that it puts you in the car. I like that it put you in the pits and showed you how impactful those pit stops can be. You know, like I said, I struggle with sports movies, especially racing movies. Like you think of Days of Thunder or Driven, they are absolutely awful, but I have to admit I enjoyed it. Hey, as we are waiting for football season to get going, I will tell you this, F1 will entertain you for a few hours, and it'll entertain you in an air-conditioned theater. If you are jonesing for something to watch right now, I would recommend go check out F1. You'll be entertained. Hey, today on The Dose, the college football and NFL seasons are coming quickly. We're actually going to start a bit of a preview of what we can expect this season in each of those in the next few weeks. Going to jump into the NFL today and take a look at a few players that are going to be pivotal to their team's success if they can step up their game. We also are going to be examining the case of the sophomore slump for NFL quarterbacks. After the rookie seasons we saw last year from that class, could we see a few players step back this year? It is entirely possible. But first, we do have a little bit of sports news to discuss. And speaking of nothing to watch, I'll admit it, I did tune in to the ESPYs for like a minute when I saw that comedian Shane Gillis was hosting. And I wasn't too disappointed. You know, the ESPYs have been completely unwatchable the last few years as the Disney people have full-on lost their minds. They've tried to make political statements instead of just making an entertaining ESPY show. And don't get me wrong, the ESPYs this last week still had way too many boring stories, but Shane Gillis had some solid jokes. He made it at least, I don't know, bearable. I honestly didn't even think that was possible anymore. Moving over to the NBA, we did see a few big names moving around last week. The Phoenix Suns took a large step toward being a team that opponents will be sitting their starters against this next season, because they will probably be flaming hot garbage. After trading away Kevin Durant, the Suns have now bought out the contract of resident chucker Bradley Beal, and he has departed and will sign with the Los Angeles Clippers, leaving the Suns with like Devin Booker and Dylan Brooks. Yeah, good luck. Meanwhile, the Clippers get a guy in Beal who they think will be a natural fit alongside Kawhi Leonard and James Harden. I mean, I don't buy it. Beal seems to make every team he plays on worse, but you do you, Clippers. They also went out and signed Chris Paul, who they say will be a great leader for that team, will ramp up that defense, will give them a solid, true point guard. I mean, who am I to argue with the Los Angeles Clippers? They obviously know what they're doing. Who am I to argue with all of their sustained success? Not to be outdone, the Portland Trailblazers announced that they would be giving their former star Damian Lillard a 3-year contract worth $42 million to come back to Portland. Of course, we remember Lillard is on the shelf for at least a calendar year after he blew his Achilles in the first round of the NBA playoffs this past season. The Blazers gave Lillard this massive deal, just hoping that he'll be able to play someday. I mean, he's 35. But honestly, what else do they have to do in Portland? They don't have anything else. I mean, what are they going to do? Sit around waiting hour after hour for another cup of overpriced coffee? Damian Lillard is basically all they have to hook their wagon to. They're going to jump on that and go with it. Moving over to the NFL, we did see a couple of interesting moves in the NFL recently as the Pittsburgh Steelers finally ponied up some big money for defensive monster TJ Watt. Now, Watt, who turns 31 in October, agreed to a 3-year, $123 million extension with the Steelers last week. That ended a contentious contract negotiation. The deal comes with $108 million fully guaranteed at signing. And that $41 million average per year, yeah, that tops the 40.25 average salary given to Cincinnati Bengals star wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase and the $40 million that the Cleveland Browns gave to Myles Garrett. So Watt will be the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. And now we get to see how this Pittsburgh roster will look. Because remember, the Steelers did sign quarterback Aaron Rodgers, wide receiver DK Metcalf, cornerback Jalen Ramsey. Hey, those are some big name guys. It is obvious the Steelers are all in on trying to win and try to win right now. It's just weird because this franchise usually builds from within, like through the draft, not in free agency. This is going to be interesting to watch. One other note in the NFL, the Washington Commanders have managed to get a little bit, well, older. It was announced over the weekend that the Commanders have signed 36-year-old Von Miller to a 1-year deal worth $6 million. No, it's not a lot of money. It's like a base contract for Von. But Von is no longer the player he used to be. In his career, Miller now has 129.5 sacks, but he only had 6 last year with the Buffalo Bills. And the Commanders, while they were ranked 11th in the NFL with 43 sacks last season, that's not bad, they actually recorded just 5 in the fourth quarter. Only 2 teams were worse in the fourth quarter. So Washington is hoping that Vaughn can make a few of his patented late game plays when the game is in the balance and up that fourth quarter sack total. But it's kind of weird because you think of the Washington Commanders and you think of their young quarterback, Jaden Daniels, right? But the Commanders are now the oldest team in the league. And I mean, oldest by a lot, by over a full year. Do you realize Washington's roster now has an average age of 27.52. Yes, they have a good young quarterback. But that Washington team, I mean, they're on the verge of getting their collective AARP card. I just hope they stay healthy because they got a lot of old guys on that roster. Finally, the WNBA had their annual All-Star Game festivities over this past weekend. And one team of players you've never heard of beat another team of players that you wouldn't recognize their names if I read them in that game. Yes, in an arena packed by tens. I think they had a 3-point contest. I don't know. Angel Reese won the layup drill, something. I have no idea. But here's the funniest part, okay? And I know you're used to when I'm going to talk about the NBA that sometimes I don't get around to it, but I'm going to actually talk about it today. Because get this, this was actually hilarious. The WNBA players are currently in a bitter feud with collective bargaining agreement negotiations with the owners of the league. And this collective bargaining agreement has to be settled by October, or there could actually be a work stoppage.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding. It actually could happen. So the players came out for all-star warmups wearing t-shirts that said, and I quote, "Pay us what you owe us in a stand of unity against the owners." That's what the shirt said. Pay us what you owe us. Not pay us what we think we deserve, or pay us some money that we have never earned, or give us some free money, or we'll miss layups for food, but pay us what you owe us. Are you serious? In the history of the WNBA, the league has never turned a profit. They are subsidized by the NBA as kind of a charity for, I don't know, differently abled people.
Oh, I'm not handicapped.
I'm sorry. Differently advantaged.
But if you say, pay us what you owe us, and you have never generated an actual profit, then you are literally saying, don't pay us anything. We actually owe you some money. And by the way, I'm pretty confident that the players spent most of their paychecks on these dumb t-shirts. Honestly, there is no league that is as tone deaf as the WNBA currently is. And I say that with a rich history of saying that the NBA and Major League Baseball are completely tone deaf. The WNBA is taking this to a new level of stupid. And I honestly, I can't even believe it still exists. So like I said, I know the NFL and college football are still a few weeks away, but they're coming fast. NFL camps are officially opening this week. Well, today, I wanted to take a look at five specific NFL players, and they're players that are young and talented. And whether they realize it or not, they are going to have a lot on their plate this season, because these five players, they have got to step up their game. And I realize that sounds cliche, but their teams are going to be counting on them. They need to have not just average seasons, they need to have big seasons, or there are going to be some massive red flags that will be raised. Here are five NFL players that really need to get it done this season. And I hate to just go all quarterbacks, although I definitely could, I won't. But I will start here with one, and it's a big one. Because Chicago Bears quarterback Caleb Williams, he's got to get it together. Of course, we know Williams was the overall number one pick out of USC last season, and he certainly looks like he has all the tools. Sure, he's a little bit like the Carl Anthony Towns of the NFL, but this kid has got to step up. Williams completed 62% of his passes last season. He threw 20 touchdowns to just 6 interceptions. He had over 3,500 yards passing. Well, that sounds pretty good. Why does he need to be better? I'll tell you why. Because he was also sacked 68 times. And those negative plays just kill you. Now, a lot of that is on his offensive line. But a lot of it was also on him. Because in college, Williams could just run around. He could eventually get someone open and make a play. That nonsense isn't going to work in the NFL. Defenses in the NFL, they will catch you, and they will sack you, and they will eventually hurt you. But those sacks aren't just a physical threat to you. They are drive killers. And that is how you end up going 5-12 on the year and losing 10 straight games in a row. Okay, the Bears went out this offseason. They upgraded that offensive line. They picked up offensive guards Jonah Jackson and Joe Tooney. But now it's going to be up to Caleb Williams. He's got to step up his game, or the Bears are going to start wondering, did we take the wrong guy? Maybe we should have taken someone else. Again, he looks like he has all the tools. Now he needs to prove it. Speaking of offensive linemen, We move next to one that is going to have a huge job this season because, like we just mentioned, the Chicago Bears went out and signed Joe Tooney away from the Kansas City Chiefs. Look, I realize that Tooney was banged up last year, but he was still playing at a pretty high level. And in Kansas City, he was playing the left tackle position, not necessarily his natural position. He was defending the blind side of quarterback Patrick Mahomes. Of course, Mahomes was sacked 36 times last year, and we do remember he was sacked 6 times in Super Bowl 59 by the Philadelphia Eagles, and I don't think it was a coincidence that he also threw 2 costly interceptions in that game. Well, now, Tooney is gone. Enter 4-year veteran tackle Jalen Moore, who comes over from the San Francisco 49ers. He's only started 12 games in his entire career. Now, Moore graded high, but that was in a backup role. That's not the same as being the guy who has to watch Patrick Mahomes back every week. And when the Chiefs struggled last season, and that offense really did at times, many times it was because Mahomes was running for his life. Well, I mean, you think about it. Tight end Travis Kelce has another year on him. Wide receiver Rashee Rice, he could miss some significant time for being an idiot. Jalen Moore and the rest of that offensive line are going to have to step up in a big way if Kansas City is going to continue their dominance. Speaking of the San Francisco 49ers, they actually took a big step backward last season. After going to 4 NFC title games and 2 Super Bowls in the last 5 years, the Niners got hit hard by the injury bug in 2024, and they dropped to an abysmal 6-11 record. Well, this offseason was not kind to the Niners. They lost a number of players. Dre Greenlaw, gone. Javarius Ward, gone. Javon Hargrave, gone. Leonard Floyd, Malik Collins, Deebo Samuel, they are all gone. Oh, and also, the Niners gave starting quarterback Brock Purdy a 5-year, $265 million contract extension. That includes $182.5 million in guaranteed money. Now, every bit of this offseason tells me the Niners are in a world of hurt. But one way they might not bottom out completely is if Brock Purdy actually plays at the level of that massive contract. Now, last season, Brock Purdy threw just 20 touchdowns, but he had 12 interceptions. He was sacked 31 times. And yes, I realize he was missing a number of weapons, including running back Christian McCaffrey. But now some of those weapons are gone permanently. And yes, I know they're saying McCaffrey's back this year. He looks better than ever. That's what they always say. Hey, Brock Purdy is going to have to find a way to live up to that massive contract. And that isn't going to be easy because he's got way less talent to do it with this year. We move to another second-year player whose rookie season, well, it was just less than expectations. Because when the Arizona Cardinals selected Ohio State wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. with the 4th overall pick in 2024, I think they were expecting a bit more than what they got. Harrison wasn't terrible, but he wasn't spectacular either. He caught 62 passes for 885 yards. Again, not terrible, but hardly what you'd think of with a top 5 pick. Now, some of Harrison's struggles were probably Kyler Murray related, but he did also struggle to run specific pass routes. And he had a really difficult time creating separation from defensive backs. Oh, and also, he struggled to catch the ball at times. He logged 5 drops on the season. Now, if you watched him in college at all, Marvin Harrison Jr. can catch. He's got great hands. That tells me he was in his own head thinking, not just reacting and playing. Hey, I really like some of the offseason moves that the Arizona Cardinals made. If Kyler Murray can just set down his Call of Duty and actually study some game film, I think Arizona could make some noise in the NFC West. But they need Marvin Harrison Jr. to take a big step forward and be the guy that they thought they were drafting. We finish off our 5 NFL players that really need to step up this year with the oldest player on our list. And again, at times he shows some flashes, but he just has not shown any consistency whatsoever. And if that doesn't happen soon, the Jacksonville Jaguars, they're going to have to move on from former top pick quarterback Trevor Lawrence. Get this, in four seasons with the Jags, and I realize they do not have a ton of talent that they've surrounded him with, but in those four seasons, Trevor Lawrence has gone just 22-38 as a starter. And in those four seasons, while he has thrown 69 touchdowns, he has also committed 82 turnovers. No, that is not a mistake. Trevor has thrown 46 interceptions and fumbled 36 times. Hey, it's hard to win in the NFL, but it's even harder to win in the NFL when you give the other team the ball back constantly. Now, like I said, Lawrence hasn't had much help in Jacksonville. He's been sacked 112 times, and that is on that franchise. Because I'm worried they're going to break Lawrence. Maybe they already have, much like the Houston Texans did David Carr back in the day. Trevor Lawrence is seeing ghosts. He's trying to do too much, and he's worried about getting hit. He's forcing passes. He's turning it over. Hey, the Jags moved up in the draft this year. They drafted Colorado Heisman winner Travis Hunter, which should give Lawrence the best receiver he's ever had down there. But Lawrence has got to show some consistency this season and give Jacksonville a reason to not pull the plug on him just yet. Remember that you should be stopping by DailyDoseSports.com each week to check out what new things we have going on over there. We have links to the podcast, we have links to the videos, and we have links to Daily Dose articles each week. They are a little more local flavored. If you checked it out this week, you know that I wrote a little bit about the Denver Broncos and what we should be watching in their training camp. So make sure you check that out. You also can always email the podcast at dailydosesports@gmail.com. We do hear from some listeners, and it's always good to hear from you. Send something good enough, we just might have to use it on the show. And remember, you can pick up some Daily Dose gear over there as well. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, baseball caps, whatever. They have it all, and you can pick it in whatever color you want. Make sure you stop by dailydosesports.com. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, the 2024 NFL draft class has a chance to go down in history as maybe the greatest quarterback draft class ever. Now, contrary to what the idiots in the sports media world tell us, however, that hasn't happened yet. Not even close. There's probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 classes that are better than 2024. But this class has an opportunity in the future to be very special. Think about the rookie quarterbacks that we saw last season. Chicago's Caleb Williams was the top pick. He didn't have a great start, but he's got a lot of tools. Jaden Daniels was amazing in his first season with Washington. He took them all the way to the NFC Championship. New England's Drake May showed flashes of maybe being very good. He's going to be the starter this year. Michael Penix took over in Atlanta. He looked like a bona fide starter. Bo Nix led the Denver Broncos to their first postseason berth since Peyton Manning. And J.J. McCarthy will be taking over in Minnesota this year. He's looked promising. We'll have to see how he is in regular season playing time. But now, NFL defenses are going to have a book on some of these guys. And they're going to be looking to take away what they like to do. Hey, NFL defenses get paid to make these guys look bad. And they're really, really good at it. So will any of these quarterbacks take a sizable step backward this season? Don't think it can't happen. It has happened before. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 takes a look back at the biggest NFL quarterback sophomore slumps ever. We start off at number 5 with a quarterback that came into the league with some high expectations because after beating an unbeatable USC team, we all figured Texas quarterback Vince Young would just carve up NFL defenses as well. And he did. For a while, the Tennessee Titans selected Young with the number 3 overall pick in 2006, and he would start 13 games as a rookie. He went 8-5 as a starter. He passed for nearly 2,200 yards. He had 12 touchdowns. He also ran for 500 yards and another 7 touchdowns. However, in his sophomore season, Yeah, NFL defenses did what they do. They started taking away those run options. They forced him to stay in the pocket and beat him, and Vince struggled. That second year, he ran for just 395 and only 3 touchdowns. He went 9-6 as a starter, not bad, but he threw just 9 touchdowns. He had 17 interceptions. Young was sacked 25 times, and he would end up suffering a few injuries. And after that sophomore season, he would start just one game the following season. He just kept getting banged up. Hey, Vince Young looked like he might be another great quarterback as a rookie. Instead, his career got derailed, and it spiraled pretty quick after that. Vince Young comes in today on our list at number 5. We move next to number 4, and we go back to the year 1993. This guy had a very good college career, even if it did fall a little short of some people's expectations. But in the early 90s, the Seattle Seahawks were on the market for a franchise quarterback, and with the number 2 overall pick, they selected Notre Dame quarterback Rick Meyer. The Seahawks turned the reins over to him right away, and he showed a little bit of promise. Meyer went just 6-10 as a starter, but he set rookie records for passing yards. He had nearly 3,000 for attempts and for completions. The problem for Meyer as a rookie, he got sacked a lot, 47 times. So in year 2, the Seahawks upgraded his pass protection. He was sacked just 27 times, big improvement, but he wasn't quite as good. He threw just 11 touchdowns. He had 7 interceptions. His yardage went down, and the Seahawks record didn't get any better. They would end up firing head coach Tom Flores, and new head coach Dennis Erickson, he wasn't that impressed with Meyer. He would eventually be traded to Chicago in 97. He was a journeyman quarterback for the rest of his career. That's not what we thought of him as a rookie, though. Rick Meyer comes in today at number 4. We arrive at number 3, and we get to another guy that was highly sought coming out of college, because Oklahoma quarterback Sam Bradford won the Heisman Award as just a sophomore. And in 2010, when the St. Louis Rams were looking for a new franchise quarterback, they grabbed him with the number 1 pick. Well, Bradford was an immediate hit as a rookie. He threw for over 3,500 yards. He had 18 touchdowns. The Rams went 7-9. Well, this is just going to get better, right? Not exactly. Because again, Bradford would suffer a high ankle sprain early in his second season and would throw just 6 touchdowns. Now, he would eventually go on to a few solid seasons later in his career, but Sam Bradford just never really materialized into a bona fide franchise guy. He would finish his career with a 34-48-1 record as a starter. Well, that's not what we thought after his rookie season. Sam Bradford comes in today at number 3. So we reached number 2 on our list of NFL quarterbacks that got hit hard by that sophomore slump. And this one could be number 1. He's probably the first one that most NFL fans would think of when they hear the words sophomore slump. But for him, it wasn't just a sophomore slump. It was pretty much every year after his rookie season, because Baylor quarterback Robert Griffin III was absolutely electric in his rookie season, playing for Mike Shanahan in Washington. RG3 looked like a future Hall of Famer. He went 9-6 as a starter. He threw 20 touchdowns and had just 5 interceptions. He was named Rookie of the Year. The problem for RG3 was he thought he was still in college. He thought he could just outrun defenders with that world-class speed. Yeah, not in the NFL. Those defenses will catch you, and they will harm you physically. He would end up getting banged up in his second year and go just 3-10 as a starter. He had 16 touchdowns, but he also had 12 interceptions. Mike Shanahan ended up benching him, and it just got worse. More injuries, less production. By his 3rd season, he was relegated to just being the backup. He would never be a consistent starter again. Robert Griffin III started strong, but he faded fast, and he comes in at number 2. So we reach the number 1 NFL quarterback sophomore slump of all time. And I'll be honest, these slumps are actually not quite as common as I expected. The more common path is for a rookie quarterback to be awful from the start and then wash out. Sophomore slumps are not nearly as common as I thought they would be. But our number 1 entry might have the strangest path of all. Coming out of the University of Stanford, he would start strong and then crash and burn. Then later in his career, eventually go on and win two Super Bowls. And no, I'm not talking about John Elway. After winning the Heisman in 1970, Jim Plunkett would be selected with the first overall pick of the 1971 draft by the New England Patriots. Well, the Patriots were a mess. So Plunkett would help, right? And he did, early. Plunkett passed for 19 touchdowns and led New England to 6 wins as a starter. Hey, this might be easy. He's going to turn them around. But then in year 2, yeah, Plunkett crashed pretty hard. The Patriots won just 3 games, and Plunkett was absolutely awful. He threw just 8 touchdowns, but threw 25 interceptions. He would eventually suffer some serious injuries. He would bounce around the league before landing in Oakland with the Raiders. And as a veteran in his 30s, he actually won the Raiders 2 Super Bowl wins in Super Bowl 15 over the Eagles and 18 over Washington. But honestly, Plunkett might have had the worst sophomore slump ever. Those numbers are horrible. Now, we will keep an eye on this impressive 2024 rookie quarterback class from last year and see if any of them might take a slight step backward or if they can maintain and keep finding ways to improve. It's going to be a really, really fun class to watch them. Hey, next week on The Dose, we are going to continue getting you ready for football by taking a look at some of the best players that college football will have to offer. Plus, we'll keep you up on all things sports, and we just might have to have another football-flavored Daily Dose Top 5 for you. So make sure you check out The Dose, and make sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Oh, I'm not handicapped.
I'm sorry. Differently advantaged.